Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, September 14th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
All righty. How are you today?
Can't complain too much.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid something was going to get, the Shemitah was going to get me yesterday, but apparently not. So far, I'm okay.
Oh, good, good. You know, there are a lot of weird things going on out there, and it is just a matter of time until one of these things do blow up, and it is a matter of time just until, you know, something nasty comes our way. And instead of making dates and be focused such on that thing, we need to view the whole picture. And because sometimes when you see that, you know, people don't do anything, and that's the worst thing that you can do. But we're not going to lecture about that right now. Right now, we're going to go into the New York spot price for gold, $1,109.80, just barely unchanged for the day. Silver, a little pressure, $1,453, down 0.19. Platinum, down 16. Oh, my pen stopped working. Down 16 at 959, and you have palladium down 6 at 593. The USDX today is trading just a little stronger, 0.05 at 95.24. Oil, 0.53 down, 44.10. And the paper markets today, a little bit of pressure on all of those. You have the Dow down 62 points at 16,370, NASDAQ down 16 at 4805, S&P down 8 at 1953, 10-year yield down 2.18%, Euro down 0.16 at 1.13, and I didn't have a chance to look at the foreign markets, pretty much all unchanged. Japan was down 300 points. Almost 2%, but other than that, everything is quiet. Everybody is holding on to their breath to see what the Federal Reserve is going to do this week. That is the moment. And
a quarter of a point.
Well, mm. I get the psychological impact on that.
Yeah, but shouldn't that have been factored into the market? We've been hearing about that quarter of a point for probably 6 months now.
You would have thought.
You would think that the market has adjusted. Oh, my gosh, they might raise the interest rate a quarter of a point. You know, in my opinion, You know, we talked about this before. There was a report from the St. Louis Federal Reserve just in the last probably 2-3 weeks ago now, where one of the vice presidents at the St. Louis Federal Reserve said, look, quantitative easing hasn't worked.
Right.
Injecting money into the system hasn't worked. It hasn't caused the inflation they expected, and therefore it has not stimulated the economy. It has supported the markets, but other than that, it hasn't worked as anticipated and expected. And he also says zero interest rates or near zero interest rates have been, they were supposed to stimulate the economy by making borrowing costs low. But in fact, he says low interest rates historically correspond to low interest rates correspond to a slow moving economy, a recession. He says if you really want to stimulate the economy and you want inflation, you need higher interest rates. That was his contention. Now, I don't know that the guy is right or wrong, but he is a vice president of the Federal Reserve, and he should know what he's talking about. And if what he's saying is true, and not just some maverick opinion, it may be that he was letting the world know they're going to raise the rates, the interest rate, and maybe not just by a quarter of a point. Because, oh, maybe a quarter point, maybe not. No, maybe they raise a half a point or 1 point or a point and a half and say, look, the economy can handle it and try to generate. And if he's right, maybe higher interest rates will generate higher inflation rates, which will stimulate the economy. But he is correct in this regard. They've lowered the interest rate. It has provided no stimulation. It's provided no inflation.
I think the lower interest rate did provide stimulation when they first lowered the rates, and it did keep this economy going. And they couldn't raise rates through the, you know, through the recession, the Great Recession, as they call it, and so forth. So lower rates did work. And I mean, we certainly see in the amount of debt that has tripled and quadrupled through personal debt and so forth, and that this is certainly what got a lot of people into trouble. That's what created our problem. And but certainly higher rates is beneficial to retirees and those with any savings, because they'll put that money in the bank. Now, if you raise your rates, see, what I see is people pulling their money out of the volatility of the stock market if the rates go high enough, and they'll put it into the banks. And that's what it's really all about. And, you'll have these people move their money out of there, and they'll put it into the banks, and you got the fractional reserve banking, and they could, you know, increase blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I think that's sort of the cycle that they're on. What I did see, Al, is I was reading an article earlier. I got interrupted, and I wasn't able to get back to it. But it isn't so much if they raise it a quarter point for here, and I agree with you. I think, you know, they've certainly conditioned the markets and so forth to where they would absorb it. However, you have a lot of small countries that have used that are the dollar was the reserve currency, and they have used debt based on our returns or our interest rates. And it isn't so much our country that might have that major impact, but it's a lot of these little ones, these littler countries, the third world emerging markets and so forth. They will be devastated, and that is what will really trickle down and affect markets. So they will be, you know, and they've already been hurt with oil pricing, you know, with the drop in oil. So but that was the gist of the article, and it made me think, well, you know, maybe the impact isn't our initial response. I mean, a quarter point, you might not see that initial response here or Europe, or but you might see it in these smaller countries, which will domino.
Well, the lesson in all of this is that the whole system is so fragile.
Exactly.
All right. It's like you're flying, you're driving down the street with an automobile, and you're scared to death if you hit one bumblebee, it'll shatter your windshield. You know, you should be able to hit a bunch of bumblebees, and it shouldn't make any difference. If one bumblebee is enough to make your windshield shatter, then there's something wrong with your windshield. This is evidence that the whole system is so fragile that a lousy quarter of a point can set it off. The other explanation I've seen on this, the one that actually makes some sense to me, is that whatever the government has borrowed since they started zero interest rate, they have certainly billions, probably trillions of dollars borrowed since then at essentially the 0.5% that's near zero interest rate. If it raises by 0.25%, they've effectively doubled the interest they have to pay on those. It's a triviality, but on the other hand, it is a doubling from 0.25% to 0.5%. I don't know that that's significant, but I've heard some people say that it might be. The whole thing just strikes me as, again, main lesson to all of this, there is something wrong. You know, down in Brazil, they're paying 14.5% interest. And they have high inflation down there, and their economy has problems and the rest of that. But the point is, 14.5% on the Brazilian economy has not collapsed the economy or driven people to all jump off a tall building or a bridge or something like that. It's a survivable situation, and down here we're worried, oh my gosh, we might have 0.5%. You know, it's one of those things you sit back and look at and say, this is strange. But we'll find out. We'll know better come Thursday. We'll find out what happens on Thursday. I believe Thursday is the day, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Thursday.
They have a two-day meeting Wednesday and Thursday.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll watch and see.
16th.
It'll give us something. It'll give us something to pay attention to. You know, it's like a horror movie. You know. Well, do you think will one of them go off all by himself down the west wing of the mansion? Because if he does, you know what's going to happen. It's very scary and spooky.
I mean, the problem is though, certainly, you know, the interest on the debt, yeah, that, I mean, you know, that would go up significantly. But the problem is, even if you raise the rates and you compare it to Brazil and so forth, and whether it starts at some of these smaller countries and their ability to hold the debt and everything is so tied together anymore. It isn't, you might not see, you know, the sky falling in, but anybody who has any savings, anybody who has, you know, a lot of paper investments, they're going to get hammered. People who don't have anything, yeah, you know, they, you know, it's like, well, you know, hey, I get, you know, my check from the government, so, you know, it's okay, but those checks will stop. And, but this is a big system that it's, you're right, it's just, the glue is not very strong anymore, and
well, maybe
it is coming apart.
Strong in a sense, and maybe it'd be a good idea if we got back to you run your nation and I'll run mine.
Exactly.
All right? And we're not going to have things so interlocked that if something strange happens in Timbuktu, oh my gosh, we're going to have a stock crash here in the United States. In fact, that was one of the arguments. The last week when the stocks dropped dramatically, it was blamed ultimately on China because, I don't remember, they had some, we talked about it on the program, they said because we were just talking about raising interest rates in this country, it caused people to lose confidence in the Chinese market, caused the market to go down to China, one thing led to another, and it caused, that was their theory, it caused the market crash in this country. It sounded like a Rube Goldberg machine with one thing, you know, you've got a ball rolls down a chute and then it triggers some sort of a balanced one, dominoes and all, and you get, something happens in the end. If those of you remember Rube Goldberg machines, they may be too old for a lot of people to remember, but I think most of you get that. Where was I going with this? It's just evidence that the system is too complex, too interconnected, and it would be a good idea to just rebuild your tariff barriers and say, okay, let's run our country, and if we crash, we know who to blame. We're not going to blame it on China. We're not going to blame it on Europe or something in South America. The cause will be within our borders. And if something happens to Canada or Uganda or China or Uruguay, fine, they know who to blame. And it makes people responsible. When you have this global thing, it gives you an opportunity, if you're in a position of power, it gives you an opportunity to say, well, let's take a shot. What do you say? Come on, let's try it. Let's see what happens. All right, we'll push this button over here and let's see what happens. A lot of people are, I think that's part of the mentality of the people that are in positions of power right now. It's just a big joke, big adventure, see what happens. And they can't easily be blamed because who knows? It's like these flash crashes. Who gets blamed for those? Who is responsible? Does anyone know? They can have a flash crash in the markets. They'll drop the markets hundreds of points in a matter of seconds. And then it jumps back up. But who was responsible for the crash? Does anyone know? Trying to weed through the system to say, okay, who pushed button A? It's so complex that you can't even find out who's responsible. All by itself, that's dangerous. You have a system that doesn't have real accountability dealing with money. You can't be surprised if some of your currency disappears. You can't be. Who's responsible? Why not steal it? That's what a lot of people think. Why not? Nobody's going to be able to find out who's really responsible. What's wrong if I help myself to an extra $100 million? Nobody will find out.
Well, you know, you had a comment in there, and there was an article last week by the BIS, and I thought we talked about it, about the central banks, that they're warning us that the central banks are unable to bail us out if there was a significant market decline or depression. And I did a little, I wanted to, on my one of my other programs that I do on Saturday, I didn't know how many central banks there were in the world. Do you know?
Well, no, I don't. There might be 100 or more. I wouldn't necessarily bet on it.
Do you know the only major nation that does not have a central bank is North Korea?
Is that right?
You've got some small island countries, such as the Federated State of Micronesia. They don't have a central bank. But if you count them, more than 99.9% of the population of the world still live in a country that has a central bank.
I understand that there's 180 currencies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, then it may be that there's 180 central banks.
Well, 99.9% of the population, the only other major nation on the globe that does not have a central bank, is North Korea. And there's some interesting stats that I got. Michael Snyder always does a good job on getting the stats on some of these things, and that's where I got those numbers. And there were some other ones that he had here. He talks about as long as our central bank has been going, our currency has diminished more than 96%, we know that, and our national debt has gotten more than 5,000 times larger. And I think there was also, and he talks about the invasion of Afghanistan, Iraq. He says, we talk about them, you know, going because they wanted to go to drop the dollar for the petrodollar, but also they did not have central banks at that point in time. Even Libya did not have a central bank.
Well, when we say central bank, what do we mean? We mean a source of fiat currency. Where did we have central banks per se before we got into a pure fiat currency system in the world? Was there a central bank? I mean, I know the Federal Reserve was here since 1913, 1914, and it helped to create the fiat currency. But essentially, when we say central bank, we're saying a source of it's not like a bank previously that might have had a bunch of gold stacked up, per se. That's an institution that creates fiat currency.
I know. Well, that's what I'm talking about. When we look about the invasion of Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq, they did not have central banks.
Yeah, I know.
During the war, they were created afterwards. New central banks were set up.
And what did they have for currency prior to the war? They're backed by gold. Iraq had a gold-based currency. And I assume Iran may still have a gold-based currency. I don't know if they do or they don't. But Iraq had an Old Testament gold-based currency. And I don't doubt that was part of the reason that they said, let's invade, these people are a problem. Let's take some commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Apothecary Herbs announces a brand new formula to help balance blood pressure from head to foot, strengthen your heart muscle, and reduce cholesterol. Now you have a professional strength alternative that works all without fear or worry of serious side effects. Empower yourself. Become independent from the expensive drugs. Call Apothecary Herbs and ask for heart, blood pressure, and cholesterol formula toll-free. 866-229-3663 or online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com. Heart, blood pressure, and cholesterol formula is just $24.95 and comes with a money-back guarantee. So get a pencil and write this down. Apothecary Herbs, toll-free, 866-229-3663 or on the web at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Here's an article from ZeroHedge.com. The headline is, "Dependence on central banks is, quote, unrealistic and dangerous, unquote, BIS warns." They mean the Bank
that's
of International Settlements.
That's what I
understand. I understand that, but I want to clarify a point. We talked about this just when we were closing down a little bit. And the IRS, or excuse me, the BIS, Bank of International Settlements, when they say dependence on central banks is unrealistic and dangerous, they're warning us that we can't depend on central banks to bail us out of the next significant market decline and or depression. They probably wouldn't be, I mean, that's the clear implication. The BIS said, look, fine, we had quantitative easing, we had near zero interest rates, we did what we could to get your chestnuts out of the fire the last time. But they're not going to be able to do it again. The central banks won't be able to pull it off again. And I'm going to presume that they wouldn't be issuing that warning unless the Bank of International Settlements felt some sort of significant decline was imminent. I'm just saying, well, you're on your own this time, folks, you know, whatever happens. And the implication, we don't know this to be true, but the implication, again, they think something is close at hand. That doesn't mean this month or next month, but close at hand. This quarter, maybe next quarter, maybe even the first quarter next year, you know. But they are warning us that they don't have any more weapons. They don't have any more tools to deal with our problems, with economic problems. And that means it's up to us. If you're going to take care of yourself, you are going to have to take care of yourself. You're not going to be able to rely on Big Daddy, Big Brother, or whoever in government to take care of you. That is quite possibly going to fail. Here's another one from Mish's Global Economic Trend Analysis. Just a little headline to comment. The headline is European Border Controls Return. Is the Schengen Free Movement Treaty dead? The Schengen Free Movement Treaty was negotiated between the various nations that have come to comprise the European Union. And it essentially said, once you're in France, you can go to Germany or England or wherever you want to go. That free movement between the nations that are party to the European Union. Well, England isn't, but France, Spain, Portugal, Italy, so on. You know, there's a little bit of regulation and control, but for the most part, once you're in, you can go anywhere in the continent, the European continent. And what they're talking about, they are having a return of border controls. Why? Because Europe is being invaded by a horde of refugees from Syria, plus other Muslims coming from other countries in the Middle East, and they're all trying to break into Europe at the same time. And we've all seen the reports of the boats, and they're coming across from North Africa, coming over to Greece or wherever. What are they going to do with all these Muslims? Europeans are essentially beginning to reject the influx of hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of Muslims fleeing from Syria and or that are invading from other Muslim countries. As European nations restore border controls to prevent illegal aliens from entering individual countries, they're essentially saying, all right, they got into Greece. Greece couldn't defend itself. There's illegal aliens in Greece. All right. But we're not going to let them in anymore into Germany. Now, Germany's been liberal up until lately. They are apparently beginning to close down their doors. Hungary doesn't want any more illegal aliens in there, if I understand. And they're saying, we're going to control our borders. Don't, you know, you may be dumb enough to let these people into your country, but don't try to send them to us because we're not taking them. So they're restoring border controls. As they do, their international borders are restored. Nationality is restored. A sense of nationalism in the sense that people say, I'm a German, I'm a Frenchman, I'm an Italian, I'm whatever. They identify with their nation rather than with the European Union. There will be a tendency in that direction. The Muslim invasion is helping to restore European nationalism and thereby helping to defeat the forces of globalization and even the New World Order. Now, that's interesting to me, and it's ironic to me. And the problems that we see in the Middle East causing aliens to or refugees to flood out of the Middle East into Europe. Who knows? Maybe there's a silver lining in all of this. Maybe it will cause Europe to say, wait a second. We can't just let everybody come in here who wants to come in.
Well,
we're going to have to be sensible about this, which one other point. All of these Muslims that are coming from Syria to Europe, why didn't they go to another Muslim country? Why don't the Muslim refugees go to Saudi Arabia or Iran or, who knows, Yemen, right? Where they would, in theory, their Muslim brothers and sisters would welcome them. Why do they insist on going to Christendom, Europe?
I'll tell you.
I'll listen to your explanation.
Because the Muslims are already there. The Muslims have already infiltrated Europe. I mean, there's a very large volume of Muslims in Europe.
I know.
And so they're going to where they've already have established areas to which they can go and automatically be accepted. And
no, they're not automatically accepted. My point is I don't think they'd be accepted in other Muslim countries. Other Muslim countries say, you Muslims, too bad for you. You're not coming into our country.
I don't think so.
The only
people
that will take care of them to any degree right now are Christians, and what they want to do is ultimately outnumber the Christians so they can behead them. We're seeing evidence that Europeans are perhaps beginning to regain a sense of nationalism. They might even, it may be too late, but perhaps they're going to start defending their own countries and their own cultures.
It isn't that the Saudi Arabia
their own borders and respect their own culture, and it's important, in my opinion, that they do.
It isn't that the Saudis don't want them. It's that they want them there so they can do exactly what you said. And the Muslims are already there in Europe. They've been there. They infiltrated Northern Europe a long time ago. I can remember in the 90s people telling me who visited certain places and told me that if you weren't in by dark, the chances of you being murdered by one was very high. This was in the 90s. When we were in London, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, that was the biggest complaint. Buildings, property, real estate is being bought up by all of these Muslim backgrounds. And that was the biggest complaint. And so, you know, they better, but, you know, I think it's probably a little late to the game.
I think it's late.
And absolutely, you get some of these,
Europe.
Just like what they're doing, trying to do here, you get some of these Muslims into their parliaments and so forth. And next thing you know, you push through a little Sharia law and there you go. And people aren't any more wise to what has been done to them.
There's a bad mentality in Europe, and it's also pervasive in the United States, where you don't have to respect your own culture, you don't have to protect your own culture, you don't have to protect your own land. Just open it up, and we're all going to sing Kumbaya, and that's a bunch of crap. We are not all going to sing Kumbaya. You get caught where you are a minority in another country, and you are vulnerable. You got a different system of values, you've got a different color of skin, you've got a different culture, it will make you vulnerable. And what we're doing is allowing illegal aliens to pour into this country, and it won't be good for us. Europe is worse. Europe is going to be lost because the Europeans are too liberal, too progressive, too nice to fight for their own property and realize the need to fight for their own culture. They're going to regret that. Before this is done, they're going to regret it. And maybe they're beginning to catch a glimpse of that now with the illegals, with the refugees that are pouring into Europe at this time. They're beginning to say, uh-oh.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. They see that the people over there are just as poor as what we are over here. You know, the only ones that are doing well are the bankers, the elite. They're the ones that are doing good. And now they're seeing they're being pushed. They're bringing these people over, governments, bringing them over by boats and dumping them off in Europe, like we talked about in Greece. And people say, well, you know what? I can't get any money from my government. Now my government's going to be giving these people money. That's my money. So it's all about money. It doesn't have anything to do with culture. I mean, that's all.
But it does have to do with culture, because you're bringing people in that are incapable of really making a productive contribution.
They don't want to make a conductive.
I don't think they can because of their culture and also their genetics. What we've seen with the Muslims is a couple of studies came out in Europe in the last 18 months probably, since the first one came out, where legitimate scientists, they just calculated the genetic damage that's been done by the Muslims, by people who have been members of the Muslim faith for several centuries. Because Muhammad married his first cousin, Muslims are inclined to do the same thing. And there is a strong impulse. And as a result of this impulse, I'm going to marry my first cousin, they have become so inbred that they are no longer capable of serious thought. They can't see as well in the dark. They are more prone to mental illness, to birth defects in their children. It's part of the reason why the Muslims, who were responsible for discovering, creating algebra, for example, they made all sorts of brilliant discoveries early on, but they've become so inbred that that particular faith has been impaired in a way that is not going to be repaired by just saying, okay, I'm not going to marry my first cousin. Well, too late. After several centuries of marrying first cousins, the Muslim community is already off balance. If they didn't have oil over there, who would feed them? They have become a race of parasites to significant degree.
Hey, we didn't have government payouts here. Who would feed them?
Oh, I understand.
You know, I don't think they're bringing them in there so they can, you know, become part of Europe. They're bringing in them in there to destroy Europe.
That's exactly right. And Europe sits there and tries to play nice and refuses to see what's happening.
Oh, they know what's happening.
Well, they don't want to face it, though, because if they face it, they're going to have to fight. The problem with Europe is Europe has this thing about getting involved in conflicts ever since World War II. They're afraid to fight. And they don't want to, no, we don't want to fight. We'll wait for the Yankees. We'll wait for the Americans. Maybe they'll do our fighting for us. And we'll find someone. Or we'll just sing Kumbaya or something. They're fools. And it's a shame. It's a shame. Europe is going to be lost. And then what's going to happen? You know, there's a lot of culture in Europe. There are a lot of edifices in Europe. Cathedrals would be one example. Maybe artwork, another one. What do you suppose the Muslims are going to do if they become sufficiently populous? Will they preserve those cathedrals and some of that artwork, or will they make it their business to destroy it? A lot of things are going to be lost. A lot of things are at risk right now. If it were me, I would not. You see the pictures of the Muslims, and, oh, the poor mom, she's got her three kids, and she's just looking for help and the rest of that. I get that. I would tell them, go home. You're going to have to figure this out and begin to understand that your problem is your culture. Your problem is your system of values. Your problem is your faith. And you're going to have to make an adjustment or you're going to perish. You want to cling to that faith? You want to cling to that culture? Go ahead, cling to it. But don't come trying to impose it on me. I know it's dumb. I know that it will not work. It hasn't worked hardly anywhere in the world in the last several centuries. The only way they happen to have a bunch of oil. They didn't have that. They'd be just chopping each other's heads off. That's all. People need to sit down and say, wait. You know, if Muhammad was truly a prophet of God, why did he set the example of marrying his first cousin? Why has that example been picked up in the Muslim faith? Why do the Muslim people, they've become so inbred over, five centuries or more? They've become so inbred that now they're impaired. And again, stop marrying your first cousin. It doesn't matter. You are now genetically impaired. You will remain impaired for several generations. This isn't going to just go away. Why, if Muhammad was a true prophet, if Allah was legitimate God and the Muslim people were his number one people, why did Allah let the Muslim people become genetically impaired? It's an incredible evidence that this is religion is mistaken, it's false. If you want to join that religion, that's your business, but you're getting into trouble. You're headed in a bad direction. And why bring them in? They're not going to be assimilated. They won't assimilate into the European culture.
It isn't designed for them to.
I know.
It's for the
destruction. But the ordinary people have said, well, it's been sold, the ordinary people will.
They don't have a choice. They just bring them in and place them, pretty much like they've done to us. They bring in the illegal aliens and they place them. There's illegal aliens. There's cities. There's all these cities, these states. They get, you know, funds from the government and so forth.
Sanctuary cities. Yeah, I know. I've seen one report claims that 51% of the illegal aliens in this country are here on welfare. That's just insane. If you want to come here to work, that's fine. If it was up to me, I wouldn't allow welfare for anyone who hadn't become a full-fledged citizen, including learning the English language. And I don't know I don't know what the citizenship process is, but it's not 60 or 90 days. I think it's something like 5 or 6 years to become a full citizen. All right, after the 5 or 6 years, if you can make it here in this country without welfare or government support for the first 5 or 6 years, fine. You're welcome to be a citizen. But if you're coming here and just saying, well, where do I sign up? You know, where do I get my welfare? We don't need you. And there's no reason why our government should bring these parasites into this country and say, oh, we'll take care of you. It's the humane thing to do. If the humane thing to do is force the Mexicans to confront the fact that their government is corrupt from top to bottom. They're run by an oligarchy. They're the reason people are coming here is because Mexico cannot provide for its own people. What do you need? You need a shooting revolution. That's what Mexico needs. It doesn't need a valve where they can ship their disaffected and young and people who can't get jobs and ship them up and let the gringos take care of them. What they need is put a lid on it, hold it down tight, let them have the pressure cooker, and put them in a position where they're going to have to figure out what's right and wrong and what's best for them and fight for it. And if they do that, they might be improved. And if they don't, if they're not improved, well, fine. Leave them in that pressure cooker. That's a harsh way to look at things, but the problem is if you're just going to take every illegal alien that the world can produce, they're going to swarm into this country and into Europe like locusts. And they will consume everything that's there. And when it's all gone, they will swarm to the next, maybe South America. Maybe they're next. Or Africa. Or who knows. But these illegal aliens aren't making a contribution. Some of them are. I can't say that all of them don't, but from my perspective, on average, they're not making a contribution. They are consumers. Right? They are what Henry Kissinger described as useless eaters. Change. Go back to your own country and fight for freedom. All right? Don't come here to just hustle the Americans, the gringos, and let us pay your bills. And we're just crazy to allow that to happen. It's self-destructive. We might just as well take needles and stick them in our arms and get stoned. It's just as stupid as allowing the country to be invaded by illegal aliens. No. In any case, Melody, did we miss our commercial break?
Not if you allow it to go on right now.
Well, let's do it. Let's break for a moment or five, and Melody and I will be back for the last segment of Mantle Survival. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. And what's next, Melody?
Well, there was a report that came out today. Federal debt held by the public totals more than $13 trillion, or about $107,000 per household in the United States. We know that's more than that, but this is just based on the public totals of $13 trillion. The report was titled Washington's Largest Monument, Government Debt. And certainly our debt has doubled over the past 7 years. And they talk about it costs taxpayers $3 to provide a benefit worth $1 to recipients. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, it's just more, just confirmation.
It's insanity.
More, and it is.
It's insanity. It's crazy. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. Say, look, you got to get a job. We can't afford to spend $3 to give you $1. It's crazy. We're going down the pipe in order to support a bunch of people who can't support themselves. And soon we're going to be among them because we won't be able. You can't keep spending $4 to give $1 to somebody else. You're going to go broke. Huh? You know, one of the things we talk about confidence in the economy and the system, whatever. What are we really confident in, Melody? What do you think they really have to maintain confidence in?
You tell
any
us.
Idea?
Well, I do, but you tell us. I'm sure it doesn't match yours.
It's confidence that the debt can be paid. We live in a world where the currency is a debt-based monetary instrument, and we will accept these worthless pieces of paper as if they were a payment. They're not, but we will accept them so long as we have confidence that the debt that is represented by that piece of paper will somehow, some way be paid. We are confident that the debt can be repaid. But you were talking about there's $100,000 worth of debt for every household in the country right now. That isn't going to be paid. That's not going to be paid.
Don't you have an extra $100,000 laying
that,
around now?
Well, not that I'm willing to give the federales. We got a call from George from Toronto, Georgia. Are you still here?
I'm here, Al. Listen,
what's
dude.
Got for us? Yeah.
You know, we got to be careful about calling these leaders in our countries insane, okay? Because when it comes time to put these bastards on trial, we're not going to let them get off the hook by them pleading insanity, okay?
I agree with you.
Okay. Now, my main question I had for you was, the banks, most of the banks around the world are on this fractional reserve banking system, correct?
Yep, yep.
Okay. Do we need fractional reserve banking to run a banking system?
Yeah, we probably do.
I mean, isn't the purpose that they espouse for that is so it'll, like, growth? It's a way of growing the system,
and
the economy?
I think they're correct. I understand that fractional reserve banking poses a danger to us the way it's being operated. But I also understand that if all we did, if you had, let's say you've got $50,000 and I've got $50,000, Melody's got $50,000, and we put it in the bank, and the bank charges us interest to store our $50,000. But that money is taken out of circulation. The bank has the whole $50,000. I deposited $50,000 in the bank, and the bank keeps my $50,000, and I got to pay them X number of dollars per year to keep my money in their safe. But all of my $50,000 has been pulled out of circulation. And if they take $50 from me and $50 from you and $50 from Melody and they keep on doing that, the money that's in the bank, there won't be enough money left to run the economy. We pull the money out of circulation. How do you get around that? You have to. They have done formulas and whatever, and they say, well, we know if he deposits $50,000, odds are he won't want more than $5,000 back at any one time, so we can loan out $45,000. And if that's all they were doing, I'd say it's a good system. I would say if it's not a good system, it's a necessary system, because otherwise there's no money left for the money supply. We have to get some of that money has to come out of that bank, all right? And the fractional reserve banking makes that possible. But the way they've run it, they've amped it up and amped it up until if I put $50,000 in the bank, they don't just loan out $45,000. By the time they get done, I don't know how much, but it just multiplies and multiplies and multiplies in ways that become ultimately irrational. It gives us a good high and a hot economy for a while, and everybody thinks we're getting rich.
Right.
Sooner or later, the whole thing blows up. It's a strange thing, and I don't know that there's a good answer to this.
No, well, I'm glad the way you explain things, though. I learned so much from this show. That's why I tune in every day.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
No, it's sincere. The other thing I wanted to ask, do you think that there's any chance of the system changing to going back, well, for the U.S. to go back to a, gold-backed and silver-backed currency?
Yeah, certainly there's a chance that it can happen. I'm sure that the powers that be absolutely don't want it to happen, but if the existing system breaks down, what else are we going to do?
I know. No, we haven't heard a word about him. Is he afraid to bring up the topic? Does he know about the topic?
I didn't hear the name you said.
Trump. Donald Trump.
I don't know. I don't know what Trump knows or what he doesn't know.
He's
an interesting character, but I don't
know. At these guys to ask some questions, They got so many handlers around them. Maybe Trump doesn't, but most of these politicians have handlers around them. You can't get close to them,
Well, I understand. One of the things that should be done, in my opinion, one of the big problems with our Constitution is they only allowed for 435 people to be congressmen. They've got 100 senators, but another 435 to be congressmen. And the result is, you divide the population 317 million by 435, and I don't know what the result is exactly, but it might be something in the neighborhood of 500,000 people per congressman. I don't know if that's true or false. I'm just guessing off the top of my head. We should have one congressman for every 50,000 people in this country. Maybe even one for every 20,000. I think that would be too many, but something like one for every 50,000. He would be forced to represent his little constituency and do what was right. If he lived in a mining community, he'd have to do what's right for the miners. And if he lived in a community that were loggers, he had to support the loggers. But when you have one representative representing perhaps, 100,000, 500,000, I don't know what the math is on this, but he doesn't know what we're doing, and we are so diverse. Our interests are so divided and that he can do anything he wants.
I agree with that, but the thing is, when you do that, Al, you are increasing the size of government. Just the things that we
But you know what else you're doing? You are increasing the probability that the congressman, the loggers are not going to agree with what the miners want, and the miners won't agree with the people that are manufacturing boats, and the net result is we'll have a lot less legislation.
Well,
instead of having 400 or 435 congressmen, suppose we had 2,000. It would be far harder to control those congressmen. Right now, they're easily controlled by the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. I don't mean perfectly, but relatively easy. Got just a few handful of these people. You'd have way more mavericks. You'd have way more independents. You'd have way more people that were going to do what they thought was right, even if they were crazy. They'd have some idea. This is what I think is right, rather than this is what I think the party wants me to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I won't say it's a perfect solution or even a good solution, but it would be a change that might be good. I mean, the way it is, who really believes it's working in the best interest of the American people?
Well, Obama wanted change. He gave us change.
Yeah, I know. Change, not just that you can believe in, change you can barely stand.
It's no better up here in Canada, It's a sad sack they got running for prime minister, let me tell you.
Wasn't it just announced?
George, thank you. We appreciate your call. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Melody?
Go ahead. Wasn't it just announced that Canada is now in a recession? So they're not doing very good up there either, up north of us. So
they need are more illegal aliens. That's the solution to Canada's problem. If I were president, I would build a bridge, a high bridge that just goes from at one end at the border with Mexico and the other end, discharge at the other end into Canada. And then we would just, you want to go? Fine. You're going to Canada. Just walk right over the top. See? Mm-hmm. That would be my infrastructure solution to these problems, Melody. Yeah. So what have we got? 2 minutes left.
Yeah, I just wanted to give an update on the silver, folks. If you're looking for silver, you better get in there. As of Friday, there were no more silver eagles being purchased. We just been informed during the program that the Perth rounds, the spiders, the 1 ounce silver spiders, we are out of stock on that. The Austrian kangaroos that we were selling, $250 per box. We'll have a little more details perhaps later on. We still got a few of those available. Canadian maple leaves are now back on the market. So right now it seems like they're about the
gold
only.
Gold or silver?
I'm talking silver. I mentioned silver in the beginning. The Canadian silver maple leaves are about the only game in town for those. So, you know, folks, don't wait to see if the premium is going to go lower or the price of silver is going to go lower. As it seems like the price of silver goes lower, premiums go higher. And you end up paying for the same thing anyway. So in product, you're not getting the selections. So make sure if you're looking to get the silver in your portfolio, give us a call at 800-375-4188. We'll keep you posted on the availability of products. There's been rumors circulating that perhaps the mint is stopping production because of the turnover from 2015s to 2016s. That's kind of much rumor. Haven't had confirmation as yet from the mint that this is the case. So, you know, until you actually get confirmations, I don't pay much attention to rumors. But last year they did stop production. I think it was the middle of November. They did stop early last year, and it was. But we didn't have the same type of demand as we do this year. So, again, don't wait, folks. Get positioned. And get positioned so you can get shipped. And we do have Morgan Silver Dollars also for immediate delivery, but you got to give us a call.
But there's a lesson in all of this, and that is supply appears to be running short.
Well, they can't keep
up.
And if it does, demand.
It does run short. I mean, prices have to go up. And one other thing, if I were running the United States Mint, and I was responsible for minting silver eagles or gold eagles, one of the reasons why I would stop minting those coins is if I had secret knowledge that the prices of those metals was suddenly going to jump dramatically, I'd just sit back and say, well, I'm going to sit on our coins, on our blanks, and we won't make any more mints until the price rises. Until the price rises and we can get fair value for whatever coins we're selling. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer, and George from Toronto. Bye-bye, folks. See you mañana.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.